All right, since Mickey is off in Land Passes, Texas, holding a gospel meeting that starts today, it falls to me to substitute. And, of course, those of you that have been in classes that I've taught before realize that my classes are not anything like Mickey's. So we shall see how things go. I'll be sharing various things on my screen today, not just necessarily the PowerPoints, but a few other things. I will start sharing the slides that we have from the book of Revelation, and we'll be looking, of course, at the letter to the church at Philadelphia. What I'd like to do first is to have Randy Childs go ahead and read the context there, Revelation chapter 3, verses 7 through 13, please.
Revelation 3, 7 through 13. And to the angel of the church in Philadelphia write, "He who is holy, who is true, who has the key of David, who opens and no one will shut, and who shuts and no one will open, says this, I know your deeds. Behold, I have put before you an open door which no one can shut, because you have a little power and have kept my word and have not denied my name. Behold, I will cause those of the synagogue of Satan who say that they are Jews and are not, but lie. I will make them come and bow down at your feet and make them know that I have loved you. Because you have kept the word of my perseverance, I also will keep you from the hour of testing, that hour which is about to come upon the whole world to test those who dwell on the earth. I am coming quickly. Hold fast what you have, so that no one will take your crown. He who overcomes, I will make him a pillar in the temple of my God, and he will not go out from it any more. And I will write on him the name of my God, and the name of the city of my God, the New Jerusalem, which comes down out of heaven from my God, and my new name. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches."
Thank you, Randy.
You're welcome.
What I would like to do is, since we're on now the sixth of seven churches that are spoken of that are in Asia, what I want to do is go back again and just look at these from a more visual point of view. As you realize, I try to get us to visualize these things. I know that some of us have been in these areas that we've been able to visit and such, and it helps me a lot, for example, when we're talking about the city of Corinth, to think of the fact that I was able to stand on the place where Paul would have stood, and I can picture behind me the Acropolis of Corinth and see the temple there. And I can see the marketplace in front of me, it becomes a little more real to me. I think one of the things that we have a tendency to think about when we're studying the Bible, especially when we're teaching our children, is how do we convince them that all of this is real and not just a story? So what I really want to do at this particular time is to just stop sharing that for right now and come and start sharing Google Earth, which you've seen me do before, and as I tested this out with Chris and Melissa, they indicated that I was going to make them seasick, but I'll have them know that I'm much more prone to seasickness than they are. We recognize our hemisphere of the globe, or for Carlos, you recognize your hemisphere of the globe down here. I want us to realize that even though we're down here in a little piece of this hemisphere, that this particular thing, which is called the Americas, makes up the entire hemisphere. But when we go over here to the Eastern Hemisphere, or as I label the Eastern Hemisphere, we realize that there's just a bunch of countries in this area. You can see the little red lines that I have down here, and we'll zoom in on that in just a minute. But I want you to realize that these places that we're talking about actually exist. They're just, as far as we're concerned, they're just kind of on the other side of the world. If we roll it over here to where you can just barely see the red marks over here and look at California over here, we can see that, well, we're probably about half an earth away from where they are. But they do exist. I know that I can verify, and others of you that have been there know that there's actually ground there that we can walk on and that people live there. When we talk about, though, the churches that we're talking about here, they all are in the area of what I refer to as the Bible lands. And I've showed you this before. This takes in pretty much all of the area where we see the Bible story taking place, from Egypt down here to Israel, and then around to present-day Turkey. But, of course, here's the Asia that we're talking about, and many of the places that Paul has been to, we see marked here. We realize that in some of the other discussions that Paul mentioned, that he had preached all the way from Jerusalem all the way to Nicopolis. When we were studying in our Tuesday afternoon class, we were trying to determine exactly where Nicopolis was. Turns out that there's an Nicopolis down here in Israel also, but it wasn't founded until about 225 A.D., so that's not what but we see here that there's areas here that the Bible doesn't specifically refer to, but we see that Paul, for example, has been to. When we look at these churches here of the seven churches of Asia, or what we have sometimes referred to as the seven churches of Asia Minor, because we refer to this particular area of Western Turkey as Asia Minor, we realize that the seven churches are here, and they're all in a circle. But I think it's important for us to realize that even though this letter was not written by Paul, that John wrote this letter, these cities are ones that Paul most likely visited. I want to look over here just a little bit and show you this little island right here. This is the island of Patmos, where John is writing from, way out here in the Adriatic? Is that what that's called? Anyone, feel free to jump in here at any time. The thing is that we've got these seven churches here, but when we look at the second chapter of the book of Revelation, we realize that the story starts out at Ephesus. And if someone has a Bible handy, and if they'd like to read in Acts chapter 19 and verses 8 through 10, Acts chapter 19, verses 8 through 10. You got it? Okay, take it, Chris.
And he entered the synagogue and continued speaking out boldly for 3 months, reasoning and persuading them about the kingdom of God. But when some were becoming hardened and disobedient, speaking evil of the way before the people, he withdrew from them and took away the disciples, reasoning daily in the school of Tyrannus. This took place for 2 years, so that all who lived in Asia heard the word of the Lord, both Jews and Greeks.
I think that's important. I think Mickey's probably mentioned this a couple of times. But the fact of the matter is that Paul was here in Ephesus for a couple of 3 years, wasn't it? And all of these areas here are part of Asia. And so the text here in Acts chapter 19 and verse 10 specifically says that all they that dwelt in Asia heard the word of the Lord, both Jews and Greeks. And we see later on down in that chapter that there was some ruckus going on, a kind of a riot that happened in Ephesus itself. And we see that the people there were concerned that all of Asia has been influenced by this thing that Paul has been preaching. So we see here that we've got a good portion of Asia right here in these seven churches, and they are all fairly large cities. They wouldn't be large as far as we're concerned, but many of them for their time were large cities. And if we were to look, for example, at Ephesus and look a little closer at this, and we've probably looked at this before, but where I have this pointer going, we can see that stadium that was being spoken of, where the crowd would have been chanting, you know, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians," and so on. The big causeway that went down here to what at that time was the water, and all this area, this swampy area, you see, it's been silted in because the river Caister, I believe, is the name of it, just brought down so much, and it ended up silting it in, so that Ephesus is actually, or that area of Ephesus is actually a ways from the ocean, well, the Mediterranean right now. What I want us to understand is that, for example, as we've just zoomed in on Ephesus there, we can see real things that were around when Paul was there, that were around when John was there, writing from this little island that's just somewhat off the coast from Ephesus, and we understand that these things are real. Now, when we look at these and we look at the journey that's being taken through the book of Revelation in chapters 2 and 3, we see that they're laid out in a circuit that is, we could say, easily accessed. Now, the lines, of course, that I have drawn are as the crow flies, and obviously we're not going to end up going across mountains and things like that in order to get from one place to another. We're going to have to go around. But, for example, you can see here that from Ephesus to Smyrna, that area, as we go along, is about 37 miles, if you could walk as the crow flies. Of course, you'd end up going down by the coastal region and up around here. Maybe it's a little more, but we need to understand that if a person was walking or riding, whatever form of transportation that they used at that time, that this would have been a good day's journey or more to get from Ephesus to Smyrna. We need to also remember that going from Ephesus to Smyrna, there would have also been little towns along in here on the route going to Smyrna, especially if, for example, Paul or whomever or the people, the Christians that were there at Ephesus and other places around Asia where they learned the word of God, they went out and they would have been proclaiming to other little towns that would have been probably on the coastline in getting to Smyrna. So,
hey, Richard?
Yes, go ahead, Randy.
That map you're showing right now, it looks like, you know, if you go, is north-north on this?
It is.
If you go northeast from Ephesus, there's what looks like a road, maybe it's a river or something, that takes you up toward Smyrna. I'm just thinking that would be the route. They'd go around the mountain and follow that road or river.
Yes. I think that's actually a road, yeah. Yeah, it's a current day road, almost an interstate. Yep.
Oh, okay. Oh, so your satellite wasn't taken back then?
It was not. I'm sorry. I didn't have the Wayback Machine started up, and so I couldn't get that way. That's right. And so there are obvious routes that we could take to get there. And if you get down, for example, in these areas right here, you can see that they might have called them mountains. We would call them hills. That's just a matter of semantics there. But if you go to here, it says that the altitude there is right where that hand is about 4,000 feet, 4,300 feet. So we're not talking big mountains, but we're talking hills that people are not going to walk across to get there. This one here says it's 1,600 feet. So, yes, we would have gone through the valleys here. So even though that's only 37 miles, as the crow flies, Paul didn't have any crows to use to help him fly. And then if we go from Smyrna, we realize that the next place that we went was to Pergamum. So Paul, or whomever, they would have traveled from Ephesus to Smyrna, which was another big port city, by the way. As you can see, the port comes in here. Smyrna, another big port city, a very rich city at that particular time. And so then moving on from Smyrna to Pergamum, we can see that Pergamum, of course, is a ways back from the sea, and it's also along a river. When we look at Smyrna, we can see, I believe that I have picked out, there's actually not many, but there's a few ruins that you can see here that might have been a marketplace or something like that where these people would have been, and so they've excavated that. But what I want us to realize that these are real. They're there. You can go and look at them. And Paul and other people that were Christians in that time would have stood there and would have talked to people and would have been persuading them of the gospel. And then the next church that we see in the book of Revelation, of course, is the church at Pergamum. We have, of course, Pergamum, the next one, which is 46 miles away from Smyrna. And you can see here also some ruins, and you note that they're on top of a hill. Obviously, the most reasonable place to have things is on top of a hill, because then it's more difficult for people to get to you. And you can see here in Pergamum the theater that was there, some of the ruins of probably the Acropolis that they had there, and such. I believe it's at Pergamum. They said also that its theater could sit about 25 or 30,000 people. A big thing. But yeah, as you can see, it's up on the hill, up on the hillside here. I think perhaps the dam causing the lake probably wasn't there at that time. We can move around here, but even looking directly to the east, I doubt that we'll actually be able to see the Mediterranean from here. You can see it just barely off, a little bit off of there. So it's a ways, or as they say in Kentucky, a fur piece from the ocean there, from the Mediterranean. The next church, of course, that we went to was Thyatira. And so from Pergamum to Thyatira, it's about 38 miles. We noticed that all of these distances are not particularly huge, but once again, you can see right here that in order to get from Pergamum to Thyatira, we're not going to hike right over these hills here. We're going to end up taking valleys around and going around. And so by the time we get there, maybe we've got a 2 days journey to walk from Pergamum to Thyatira. And Thyatira, I forget which one it was, is that it may have been Sardis that Mickey said that there was a big rock there that they were on and such, that that's where their battlements were anyway. But if we look at Thyatira and we go around, we realize that it's just in the middle of a plain, and that it's surrounded by hills in the distance, much like we are, except that here in the Antelope Valley, except that our hills, of course, are much bigger than these hills. So, but we see that this is in a valley, and you can tell by the agriculture that's going there right now that it's a fertile valley. It's serviced apparently by a couple of rivers, and so we have something there. I don't think, I think we tried to zoom in on there on Thyatira, and I believe I didn't zoom in very closely because I couldn't find any ruins obvious in Thyatira. There was something here, but I think I came to the conclusion earlier on that it was a gas station or something like that. So the next journey that we would have taken would have been from Thyatira to Sardis. From Thyatira to Sardis, only about 32 miles, and you have to get it a little wet taking the director out, so it goes around in a circuit there. Let me find the Thyatira to Sardis. And we can see now that you would have gone here and headed around the lake and headed into Sardis. You see that Sardis is right at the edge of these mountains right here, and I believe that's the one that Mickey was talking about, where they had the battlements where the soldiers' helmet rolled down and things like that. But here you can see the ruins of a temple at Sardis. The problem with Google Earth here is that if I go down to surface level and try and look around, they're just essentially vague representations of what it looks like. So you'll remember that the picture that Mickey showed a pretty spectacular looking hill that they would have climbed up, but the town of Sardis itself is just sort of situated in between a couple of these hills, a couple of larger ones up here, but nothing that looked quite as impressive as Mickey had on the picture. It was probably this hill right here where they went to defend their city. But once again, I say this, all they're doing is trying to represent what these mountains look like on a street view, as it were, based on satellite maps. Sardis was a well, however, fortified city as far as their Acropolis went. And then from Sardis, we head to the city that we're going to start looking at today, and that's Philadelphia. The trip from Sardis to Philadelphia is only about 28 miles. You see that it goes right along this valley right here. So Sardis and Philadelphia are both essentially in the same valley. If we look at Philadelphia, I believe that this is one that where the book said that they're just you just couldn't see a lot of the ruins. In that The city was built over a lot of it, but you can look and see that it's in a plain, much like Sardis was. Once you have the mountains in the background, of course, you have a fertile plain around you, where there's a lot of agriculture, both in the past and presently. And then finally, the church that we'll look at last, Mickey will get to, is of course the church in Laodicea. And from here in Philadelphia to Laodicea is one of our bigger trips of 48 miles. So getting from Philadelphia to Laodicea, it still looks like you're sort of going down a valley here, but looks like you've got a bit of rough terrain going to get from Philadelphia to Laodicea, which is down here. Laodicea, we'll zoom in on a little bit. I think that I was able to find some ruins there. Yes, we're looking down on the top of these, and you can see that there was a theater there also. We see here a couple of things that might have been temples, maybe some houses, and maybe a marketplace. So a lot of excavation going on here in Laodicea, and I think they're up on a slight hill, but not really high. Certainly nothing like some of the other cities were. So as we go around again, once again we see that the city is built on a fertile plain. There's some mountains apparently that even appear to have some snow on them. Once again, we're in a plain, well watered, and suited for agriculture. And so that's the seven cities of Revelation chapter 2 and 3. If we add these all up, which I did at one time, but don't have my calculator up now, so I don't remember what they were, it's somewhat less than 300 miles. And so we see that if someone started down in Ephesus and went around to all seven of these churches, and of course the longest trip is from Laodicea to Ephesus at 97 miles, just getting back to our starting point, but you can see here that it looks like fairly easy walking as far as in the valleys go to get there. Though 97 miles is probably not something that any of us would want to walk. But it's about 300-something miles. I don't know, Linda, if you have this added up in your head yet or not. No? Okay. It's quite a ways, but we understand that Paul, for example, was in Ephesus for 3 years? We understand that it mentions that the gospel was brought to all of Asia, that the people that were selling the statues of Diana, that they were concerned that these people had taught everybody in all of Asia, and they were being influenced. And so their trade was going away because of the influence of the people who were preaching the gospel, who were telling that these gods are not gods, but that there is only one God. I was looking at Ephesus before, just trying to figure out what people would have seen when they were looking for example from Ephesus. And if we scroll around here and get down, we realize that we're looking out over the Mediterranean, the Adriatic here, I think it is, isn't it? But it's all part of the Mediterranean Sea. So we realize that it could be perhaps at Ephesus and some of these other places, it could be called a fairly scenic area, nice places to live in, and some of them were very prosperous cities. So Smyrna there and Pergamum here. Start going inland to Thyatira. You see that my altitude here, though, is 16 miles, so you have to get up a bit in order to see what we're seeing. And then from Laodicea back to Ephesus. All right, so any questions here on our land tour of the area? So the city that we want to start talking about now is this, the city of Philadelphia. Yes, Carlos.
Well, thank you. I have never seen using this tool, and it's sensational. It's fabulous, the way that we can learn how these people had to walk long distances. And I had no idea about the difficulties these brethren had to visit each other, for example, or to get news from different churches. And thank you very much. It was very interesting and good illustrate.
Yeah, it's I just find this brings to life, to me anyway, the fact that real people lived in real areas, and that if you wanted to spend the money, you could go do that right now, and you could see those areas where people were.
Hey, Richard.
Yes.
You know, we were reading from Philippians, and it kind of led us into Colossians, and how the Colossians when it was written, they were told to also take that letter to the church in Laodicea. So Colossae and Laodicea are really close, aren't they?
I believe they are, and I don't know whether I have it on my map or not. Let me see. Apparently I don't. So there's Antioch of Pisidia, but the next one I have is Laodicea. So, yes, you're right. I think Colossae's right in this area right here, not too very far away. Linda's shown it to me on the map. Oh, it looks like it's just south of Laodicea, yes?
Yes.
Okay. So it's out in here somewhere.
South and maybe a little to the east.
South and a little to the east. So there might be something out here. If we were to go look for it, we'd be able to place Colossae. But yeah, I remember that. It says, read the letter that was sent to the church at Laodicea. And a lot of people, of course, they say, well, that's because we have a lost letter here. But we realize that there's several references that indicate that the letters were shared, and that other people were told to read the letter that happened to be at this particular city at that time, and so on. All right, Philadelphia, that's where we were, yes, Philadelphia. So I was going to stop sharing this. I just wanted to show you this, what I had put together real quickly on the meaning of Philadelphia. When we look at the word Philadelphia, it's made up of two Greek words, philos and adelphos. When we realize that, we realize that we have used the word phileo before in a discussion between who? Peter and Jesus, right? Chris, do you remember about that? I think it was when Jesus asked Peter, do you love me, right?
Right, that's in John chapter 21. And Jesus first asked Peter, do you love me more than these, using the word agape, and Peter replied with phileo. He asked him a second time, do you agape me? And Peter replied with phileo, and then Jesus asked the third time, do you even phileo me?
Right, and Peter finally used the right word at the end of that, using the agape word for love for Jesus. But we can see this. Philadelphia, we simply break that into two Greek words, philos, which of course just means a dear or a friend, as it says, a friendly person. King James Version uses the word friend. And then adelphos, of course, just simply means brother. As you can see down there, as they break it apart, meaning from, and delphos meaning the womb. So from the womb, in other words, a brother, literally or figuratively. And as they comment here, it could be near or remote. So the King James Version uses brother. So it's a brotherly love is what we're talking about here. So you hear the one in the United States, of course, called the city of brotherly love. I'm not sure that's highly accurate, but still the fact of the matter is that Philadelphia is used as the name of a few cities around the world. And that's what that's how Philadelphia is made up. That's what we've got there. I'm going to go back then to the PowerPoint presentation on the book of Revelation. And we, of course, as we go through Mickey's slides here, we realize that we're going in the order that he's done for every church. So we identify the author. We realize, of course, in verse 7 that it's talking about the angel of the church in Philadelphia or to the angel of the church in Philadelphia write, these things saith he that is holy, he that is true, he that hath the key of David, he that openeth and none shall shut, and that shutteth and none openeth. So we realize once again that we're talking about Jesus speaking through his messenger here, that this is the author of the book of Revelation and of this. And then, of course, in verses 8 through 11, as Randy has already read, we have the commendation of them, and then there is a promise to them as to really to all the churches, is that if they overcome, or in this case, if they continue to overcome. And so that kind of summarizes verses 7 through 13, which is about the church in Philadelphia. We realize that we've seen this slide several times. There were some good churches, and this is one of those. So Smyrna and Philadelphia were the ones about which no particular bad thing was said. There were some that were good and bad, Ephesus, Pergamum, Thyatira, and Sardis. And, of course, we've just spoken of Laodicea. They got some of these slides are from a packet that Mickey purchased so that he could look through them and decided to use some of them. So some of these things are things that you wouldn't expect that Mickey would really come up with and say. So get a letter, you've done great, so keep on. You have promise and opportunity. Dear Philadelphia, I know your works. But the important thing is that this was a church that was faithful. And we'll talk about this church with an open door as we go on. But they had their door open. And so we see that in verse 7. He that openeth and none shall shut. Philadelphia then, we've already looked at a lot of these physical things. It was 28 miles southeast of Sardis. We looked at that. We could get there by sort of walking through one of the valleys. It goes back about as far as 159 BC. And as I recall, this is one of the younger cities of the seven. It may be the youngest one. There was a note here somewhere, I think, on one of the further slides. And this king, Attalus II, Philadelphus, of Pergamum, he named the city out of affection for his brother Ecumenus II. There are other stories about that it was named after them because of the love they had for one another. Which, of course, if you think about the ancient history, you realize that there wasn't a lot of brotherly love going on back there. As we read some of the ancient history, we see that a lot of the sons and fathers and brothers and sisters were killing each other off just so that they could have power. But that's the tradition behind this city. One of the reasons of Philadelphia was as a missionary city for the purpose of spreading the Greek culture and language. Now, if we go back to Google Earth here and look at this, we look at Philadelphia and we realize that it's in the middle of this big plain right here. There were a lot of roads, commercial roads, that went through this area. And there were a lot of roads that merged in this area also. And so Philadelphia was chosen as a city that could be the one that could be the example of Greek culture. That was one of its big selling points, you might say. We'll go back to the PowerPoint. And that's why it was called a missionary society, a city rather, for the purpose of spreading the Greek culture and language. There we go. This is what the youngest of the seven cities. As you can tell, it was a big agricultural area, and in that area of Greece, they raise a lot of grapes. So the city's coins displayed an image of the god of wine. I forget what his name is. It's something that's used these days.
Dionysus? Yep.
Okay. Thank you. And so that's what I was talking about, a great highway, the highway from Europe to the eastern side. So as we're coming down from the north, as you see, as we're going through that valley, we go through Philadelphia. Of course, we'd end up going through Laodicea also and some of the other towns. But Philadelphia was kind of centrally located. and it was most favorable for those commercial purposes, and it was strategically located also. So it was up against the mountains to a certain extent. So that means that they could easily defend themselves also. And there were a lot of temples and such in that area. And so it was a center for that kind of worship. It was many times called Little Athens because it had a tendency to look a lot like Athens, essentially the city of temples. If you've ever looked at pictures of Athens, you realize that there's temples all over the place. And of course, here's just a bigger map of what we're talking about. Not quite as much detail as looking on Google Earth with its satellite pictures, but we can see where we are, and once again we see that big circle going out essentially really from Ephesus and around and back to Ephesus that take into account pretty much all of the area of Asia. Bacchus, yes, that's the other one that I was thinking of. Jenny just texted that to me. Bacchus is one of the Roman equivalents of Dionysus. That's the one that I was actually thinking of, couldn't come up with. But I think there's something in New Orleans that they call the Feast of Bacchus or something that has to do with their big yearly festival. Albert Barnes, in his quotation, that he talks about the country is extremely magnificent. There's gardens and vineyards and such alike as that. And it says, one of the most beautiful and expansive plains of Asia. I look at this and I'm thinking, well, I don't know about that, but yeah, it looks fine, especially when you zoom up and you look at all the agricultural areas. And I think this pretty much should take care of our, yes. So I think what we're going to do is that for next week, Mickey may, as he does, have a brief review on Philadelphia, and perhaps take up here at this one he calls Fleeing Philadelphia, because the city was decimated by an earthquake in 17 AD. A lot of these cities that we've just spoken of were frequently decimated by earthquakes. So it's a very geologically active area. I'm going to stop sharing my screen and turn it back over to Chris and go from there.
All right. Thank you, Richard. Appreciate that. You know, it's interesting when you talked about how the church in Ephesus spread the gospel throughout all of Asia, and to think of the travels they went through. But as you pointed out, as they traveled, they were carrying something with them. And it wasn't the written text, but they were taking with them everything they had been taught by the Apostle Paul, the school of Tyrannus, sharing the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ wherever they went. And it's admirable that as we study the book of Revelation, as Mickey has pointed out, you know, the conditions for Christians at that time was not good. You know, there was a lot of persecution both at the hands of the Jews as well as the hands of the Romans, yet Christians went everywhere and they carried that message, and that's a great example for us.